a history lesson now as events unfold in the Middle East, one of many we've had to have to fully understand what's been going on in the region. This morning, our focus, Libya, of course. For years, the words Libyan strongman Colonel Muammar Gaddafi was about all we needed to know about this North African oil producer. But what was Libya like pre-Gaddafi? How have circumstances changed in the more than four decades since Gaddafi took power? To answer these questions, plus questions from listeners, you've been posting them at the 877-8MyTake or thetakeaway.org. We're going to put them to our next guest, joined by Marius Deeb, professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
I'll just put it to you straight. Where did Libya come from? It began as Libya or as the Kingdom of Tripoli?
Yeah, it began, of course, in modern times, as we know it, as a kind of a federal state of Libya in December 1951. And the king who became the king of Libya was really the kind of ruler of Cyrenaica, which is the eastern part of Libya. We know about Cyrenaica now because it's where the rebellion started. And in a way, he was not only a ruler, but he was the head of a mystical religious order called the Senussia. And so he was absolutely, undoubtedly, a beloved leader of the people, the region there, the tribes there. They all belonged more or less to that mystical religious order. And then it became a unified state in 1963 under the king, King Idris I. So he remained in power from 51 to 69, when on September 1st, 69, Gaddafi made a coup.
And is Gaddafi associated with the same or a different tribal affiliation than the king was, King Idris, who was overthrown?
Yeah. You know, the king, of course, was his mainstay of power was in the east. Gaddafi hailed somehow from the middle, from a place called Sirte, which is a sort of a road now runs between the east and the west, runs through that place. And therefore, he didn't belong to the Senussia religious movement, which the king was the leader as well as the king. However, the king was reluctant to become king of Libya. He wanted to be only the ruler of Cyrenaica, but the Libyans prevailed upon him to become the ruler of the whole of Libya. So Gaddafi did not belong to the region where the king had, you know, sort of great respect and undisputed leader.
You know, one of our listeners in Oklahoma City texted this question to us. How is it that the Libyans tolerated Gaddafi for so long?
Yeah, it was difficult. You know, he went through various stages. He changed his ideology gradually from siding from the very, very beginning with the very charismatic leader of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, who was still alive, for a year. Gaddafi in power, Gamal Abdel Nasser was still alive till 1970.
The Egyptian leader, Nasser.
In power in 69. Yeah. And then he changed. And, of course, he used the same methods like Egypt, a police state, to control the country. There were coups against him and unsuccessful. One in 75, and there was an attempt to kill him many times in the 80s and 90s, but he survived.
And let's talk a little bit about the sort of colonial history of the Libyan territory, or the territory that now constitutes Libya. Part of it was in Italy's old colonial empire, part of it in France, and part of it not part of any colonial empire. Is that the case?
Yeah, more or less was really France in the south and Italy, the rest of the country. And it took Italians a long time, two decades from the first from the second decade of the 20th century to the fourth decade of the 20th century to really subdue the opposition against the colonial rule. And mainly it came from the Senussia movement, the followers of the future king, Idris I.
And, you know, what a fall from grace. I mean, we talk about credibility among Libyans, that question from our listener, but barely a year ago, Gaddafi, in his town that you've described, the Sirte, hosted a summit of Arab leaders describing how we're going to ask for all sorts of reforms that were actually endorsed at that place. What an irony.
Yeah, you know, he promised a lot of reforms and all that. But Gaddafi has always been a dictator. Supposedly, he has no title, really. He's not president of Libya. He considers himself, you know, sort of the leader of Libya, the revolutionary leader of Libya. But he controls Libya through a various security apparatus and a police state and informants. And therefore, despite the facade of being sort of the people's republic, as he calls it, it's really it's a police state, has always been a police right. state from the time he came to power.
Marius Deeb, the professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University, you sort of alluded to it there. Do you know his exact title in English? I think it begins with the word brother, right?
Yeah, he calls himself, you know, in the equivalent of English, the brother leader of the revolution or brother colonel, because that's the military rank he had when he made the coup. He is very proud of the fact that he became a colonel. That was a great achievement.
Right.
And therefore, there was of course, Libya also has been informal. I mean, people could petition him directly, even, you know, if they wanted some, they had some grievances. And sometimes he responded. I mean, you know, it's a tribal society. There's quite an informality in which people address each other.
Right. Here's one of our listeners with another question.
This is Christina from Nyack, New York. I'm wondering, who are the likely leaders in Libya should the revolution succeed?
From history to the future. You want to take that one on, Marius Deeb?
Sure. I mean, already if we have a look, if we just look what happened in the eastern part of the country, the Cyrenaican, where the rebellion, you know, succeeded. I mean, they're in control, although some airstrikes have been, you know, undertaken by Gaddafi against some regions. You already have a committee. You already have a kind of interim government of sorts, and the leaders sound very reasonable guys, the judges, head of the, you know, kind of association of lawyers, the bar, a lady who's absolutely also a lawyer and also a very progressive ideas, is the spokesperson for that committee. So, I mean, you already have the future leaders there. They're young, some are old and some are young, all came together
right.
and formed this interim government.
Well, fascinating stuff. And again, all the details that Marius Deeb conveyed there are available on our website. He's professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Our coverage on Libya, all archived on our site. You can get more historical detail at thetakeaway.org. And remember, as the coverage continues, keep sending your questions, keep the conversation going, post them to thetakeaway.org or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We've also been hearing from many of you about the issue here at home, the fate of public unions.
It's just fashionable to put the burden of budget crisis on the backs of public workers because they're easy scapegoats, even though they had nothing to do with the current budgetary crisis faced in this country. Wall Street has that distinction.
Join any of our conversations at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out. This is The Takeaway.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.